Rooster said. We are looking for shelter. There's three of us. The face in the door said, There is no room for you here. The door closed, and in a moment the light inside went out. Rooster turned to us and made a beckoning signal. Labeef dismounted and went to join him. I made a move to go, but Labeef told me to stay in the cover of the break and hold the horses. Rooster took off his deerskin jacket and gave it to Labeef and sent him up on the clay bank to cover the chimney. Then Rooster moved about 10 feet to the side and got down on one knee with his rifle at the ready. The jacket made a good damper, and soon smoke could be seen curling out around the door. There were raised voices inside, and then a hissing noise as of water being thrown on fire and coals. The door was flung open, and there came 2 fiery blasts from a shotgun. It scared me nearly to death. I heard the shot falling through tree branches. Rooster returned the volley with several shots from his rifle. There was a yelp of pain from inside, and the door was slammed to again.
I'm a federal officer, said Rooster. Who all is in there? Speak up and be quick about it.
A Methodist and a son of a bitch,
was the insolent reply.
Keep riding.
Is that Emmett Quincy? Said Rooster.
We don't know any Emmett Quincy.
Quincy, I know it is you. Listen to me. This is Rooster Cogburn. Columbus Potter and 5 more marshals is out here with me. We have got a bucket of coal oil. In 1 minute, we will burn you out from both ends. Chuck your arms out clear and come out with your hands locked on your head and you will not be harmed. Once that coal oil goes down the chimney, we are killing everything that comes out the door.
There is only 3 of you.
You go ahead and bet your life on it. How many is in there?
Moon can't walk. He's hit.
Drag him out. Light that lamp.
What kind of papers have you got on me?
I don't have no papers on you. You better move, boy. How many is in there?
Just me and Moon. Tell them other officers to be careful with their guns. We're coming out.
A light showed again from inside. The door was pulled back, and a shotgun and 2 revolvers were pitched out. The 2 men came out with 1 limping and holding to the other. Rooster and Labeef made them lie down on their bellies in the snow while they were searched for more weapons. The one called Quincy had a bowie knife in 1 boot and a little 2-shot gambler's pistol in the other. He said he had forgotten they were there, but this did not keep Rooster from giving him a kick. I came up with the horses, and Labeef took them into the stock shelter. Rooster poked the 2 men into the dugout with his rifle. They were young men in their 20s. The one called Moon was pale and frightened and looked no more dangerous than a fat puppy. He had been shot in the thigh and his trouser leg was bloody. The man Quincy had a long, thin face with eyes that were narrow and foreign-looking. He reminded me of some of those Slovak people that came in here a few years ago to cut barrel staves. The ones that stayed have made good citizens. People from those countries are usually Catholics, if they are anything. They love candles and beads. Rooster gave Moon a blue handkerchief to tie around his leg, and then he bound the 2 men together with steel handcuffs and had them sit side by side on a bench. The only furniture in the place was a low table of adzed logs standing on pegs and a bench on either side of it. I flapped a tow sack in the open door in an effort to clear the smoke out. A pot of coffee had been thrown into the fireplace, but there were still some live coals and sticks around the edges, and I stirred them up into a blaze again. There was another pot in the fireplace, too, a big one, a 2-gallon pot, and it was filled with a mess that looked like hominy. Rooster tasted it with a spoon and said it was an Indian dish called sofki. He offered me some and said it was good, but it had trash in it, and I declined.
Was you boys looking for company? He said.
That is our supper and breakfast both, said Quincy. I like a big breakfast.
I would love to watch you eat breakfast.
Sofki always cooks up bigger than you think.
What are you boys up to, outside of stealing stock and peddling spirits? You're way too jumpy.
You said you didn't have no papers on us, replied Quincy.
I don't have none on you by name, said Rooster. I got some John Doe warrants on a few jobs I could tailor up for you. Resisting a federal officer, too. That's a year right there.
We didn't know it was you. It might have been some crazy man out there, Moon said.
My leg hurts.
Rooster said, I bet it does. Set right still, and it won't bleed so bad.
Quincy said,
We didn't know who it was out there a night like this. We was drinking some, and the weather spooked us. Anybody can say he's a marshal. Where's all the other officers?
I misled you there, Quincy.
When was the last time you seen your old pard, Ned Pepper?
Ned Pepper, said the stock thief. I don't know him. Who is he?
I think you know him, said Rooster. I know you have heard of him. Everybody's heard of him.
I never heard of him.
He used to work for Mr. Burlingame. Didn't you work for him a while?
Yes, and I quit him like everybody else has done. He runs off all his good help. He's so close, old skinflint. I wish he was in hell with his back broke. I don't remember any Ned Pepper.
Rooster said,
They say Ned was a mighty good drover. And I'm surprised you don't remember him. He is a little feisty fella, nervous and quick. His lip is all messed up.
That don't bring anybody to mind. A funny lip.
He didn't always have it.
I think you know him. Now, here's something else. There's a new boy running with Ned. He's short himself, and he's got a powder mark on his face, a black place. He calls himself Cheney, or Chelmsford sometimes. He carries a Henry rifle.
That don't bring anybody to mind, said Quincy. A black mark. I would remember something like that.
You don't know anything I want to know, do you?
No, and if I did, I would not blow.
Well, you think on it some, Quincy. You too, Moon.
Moon said,
I always try to help out the law if it won't harm my friends. I don't know them boys. I would like to help you if I could.
If you don't help me, I will take you both back to Judge Parker, said Rooster. By the time we get to Fort Smith, that leg will be swelled up as tight as Dick's hat band. It will be mortified, and they will cut it off. Then, if you live, I'll get you 2 or 3 years in the federal house up in Detroit.
You're trying to get at me, said Moon.
They'll teach you how to read and write up there, but the rest of it is not so good, said Rooster. You don't have to go if you don't want to. If you give me some good information on Ned, I will take you to McAllister's tomorrow, and you can get that ball out of your leg. Then I will give you 3 days to clear the territory. They have a lot of fat stock in Texas, and you boys can do well there.
Moon said,
We can't go to Texas.
Quincy said,
Now, don't go to flapping your mouth, Moon. It is best to let me do the talking. I can't sit still. My leg is giving me fits.
Rooster got his bottle of whiskey and poured some in a cup for the young stock thief.
If you listen to Quincy, son, you'll die or lose your leg, said he. Quincy ain't hurting.
Quincy said,
Don't let him spook you, Moon. You must be a soldier. We'll get clear of this.
LaBeef came in, lugging our bedrolls and other traps. He said,
There are 6 horses out there in that cave, Cogburn.
What kind of horses? Said Rooster.
They look like right good mounts to me. I think they are all shod.
Rooster questioned the thieves about the horses, and Quincy claimed they had bought them at Fort Gibson and were taking them down to sell to the Indian police called the Choctaw Light Horse. But he could show no bill of sale or otherwise prove the property, and Rooster did not believe the story. Quincy grew sullen and would answer no further questions. I was sent out to gather firewood, and I took the lamp, or rather the bull's-eye lantern, for that was what it was, and kicked about in the snow and turned up some sticks and fallen saplings. I had no axe or hatchet, and I dragged the pieces in whole, making several trips. Rooster made another pot of coffee. He put me to slicing up the salt meat and corn dodgers, now frozen hard, and he directed Quincy to pick the feathers from the turkey and cut it up for frying. LeBeef wanted to roast the bird over the open fire, but Rooster said it was not fat enough for that and would come out tough and dry. I sat on a bench on one side of the table, and the thieves sat on the other side, their manacled hands resting between them up on the table. The thieves had made pallets on the dirt floor by the fireplace, and now Rooster and LeBeef sat on these blankets with their rifles in their laps, taking their ease. There were holes in the walls where the side had fallen away, and the wind came whistling through these places, making the lantern flicker a little, but the room was small, and the fire gave off more than enough heat. Take it all around, we were rather cozily fixed. I poured a can of scalding water over the stiff turkey, but it was not enough to loosen all the feathers. Quincy picked them with his free hand and held the bird steady with the other. He grumbled over the awkwardness of the task. When the picking was done, he cut the bird up into frying pieces with his big Bowie knife, and he showed his spite by doing a poor job of it. He made rough and careless chops instead of clean cuts. Moon drank whiskey and whimpered from the pain in his leg. I felt sorry for him. Once he caught me stealing glances at him, and he said,
"What are you looking at?"
It was a foolish question, and I made no reply. He said,
"Who are you? What are you doing here? What is this girl doing here?"
I said, "I am Mattie Ross of near Dardanelle, Arkansas. Now I will ask you a question. What made you become a stock thief?" He said again,
"What is this girl doing here?"
Rooster said,
"She's with me."
"She is with both of us," said LeBeef.
Moon said,
"It don't look right to me. I don't understand it."
I said, "The man Cheney, the man with the marked face, killed my father. He was a whiskey drinker like you. It led to killing in the end. If you will answer the marshal's questions, he will help you. I have a good lawyer at home, and he will help you, too."
"I am puzzled by this,"
Quincy said.
"Don't get to jawing with these people, Moon."
I said, "I don't like the way you look." Quincy stopped his work. He said,
"Are you talking to me, Runt?"
I said, "Yes, and I will say it again. I don't like the way you look, and I don't like the way you are cutting up that turkey. I hope you go to jail. My lawyer will not help you." Quincy grinned and made a gesture with the knife as though to cut me. He said,
"You're a fine one to talk about looks. You look like somebody has worked you over with the ugly stick."
I said, "Rooster, this Quincy is making a mess out of the turkey. He has got the bones all splintered up with the marrow showing." Rooster said,
"Do the job right, Quincy. I'll have you eating feathers."
"I don't know nothing about this kind of work," said Quincy.
"A man that can skin a beef at night as fast as you can ought to be able to butcher a turkey," said Rooster.
Moon said,
"I got to have me a doctor."
Quincy said,
"Let up on that drinking. It's making you silly."
LeBeef said, "If we don't separate those two, we are not going to get anything. The one has got a hold on the other." Rooster said,
"Moon is coming around. A young fella like him don't want to lose his leg. He is too young to be getting about on a willow peg. He loves dancing and sport."
"You're trying to get at me," said Moon.
"I'm getting at you with the truth," said Rooster.
In a few minutes, Moon leaned over to whisper a confidence into Quincy's ear.
"None of that," said Rooster, raising his rifle. If you have anything on your mind, we will all hear it.
Moon said,
We seen Ned and Hayes just 2 days ago.
Don't act the fool, said Quincy. If you blow, I'll kill you.
But Moon went on.
I'm played out, said he. I must have a doctor. I'll tell what I know.
With that, Quincy brought the Bowie knife down on Moon's cuffed hand and chopped off 4 fingers which flew up before my eyes like chips from a log. Moon screamed, and a rifle ball shattered the lantern in front of me and struck Quincy in the neck, causing hot blood to spurt on my face. My thought was, I am better out of this. I tumbled backward from the bench and sought a place of safety on the dirt floor. Rooster and Labeef sprang to where I lay, and when they ascertained that I was not hurt, they went to the fallen thieves. Quincy was insensible and dead or dying, and Moon was bleeding terribly from his hand and from a mortal puncture in the breast that Quincy gave him before they fell.
Oh, Lord, I'm dying, said he.
Rooster struck a match for light and told me to fetch a pine knot from the fireplace. I found a good long piece and lit it and brought it back, a smoky torch to illuminate a dreadful scene. Rooster removed the handcuff from the poor young man's wrist.
Do something. Help me,
were his cries.
I can do nothing for you, son, said Rooster. Your pard has killed you, and I've done for him.
Don't leave me laying here. Don't let the wolves make an end of me.
I will see you are buried right, though the ground is hard, said Rooster. You must tell me about Ned. Where did you see him?
We seen him 2 days ago at McAllister's, him and Hayes. They are coming here tonight to get remounts and supper. They are robbing the Katy Flyer at Wagner's Switch, if the snow don't stop them.
There is 4 of them?
They wanted 4 horses, that's all I know.
Ned was Quincy's friend, not mine. I would not blow on a friend.
I was afraid they would be shooting, and I would not have a chance bound up like I was. I am bold in a fight.
Rooster said,
Did you see a man with a black mark on his face?
I didn't see nobody but Ned and Hayes.
When it comes to a fight, I am right there where it is warmest, but if I have time to think on it, I am not true. Quincy hated all the laws, but he was true to his friends. What time did they say they would be here?
I looked for them before now. My brother is George Garrett. He is a Methodist circuit rider in South Texas. I want you to sell my traps, Rooster, and send the money to him in care of the district superintendent in Austin. The Dunn horse is mine. I paid for him. We got the others last night at Mr. Burlingame's.
I said, Do you want us to tell your brother what happened to you? He said,
It don't matter about that. He knows I'm on a scout. I will meet him later, walk in the streets of glory.
Rooster said, Don't be looking for Quincy.
Quincy was always square with me,
said Moon.
He never played me false until he killed me. Let me have a drink of cold water.
Labeef brought him some water in a cup. Moon reached for it with the bloody stump and then took it with the other hand. He said,
It feels like I still have fingers there, but I don't.
He drank deep, and it caused him pain. He talked a little more, but in a rambling manner and to no sensible purpose. He did not respond to questions. Here is what was in his eyes: confusion. Soon it was all up with him, and he joined his friend in death. He looked about 30 pounds lighter. Labeef said,
I told you we should have separated them.
Rooster said nothing to that, not wishing to own he had made a mistake. He went through the pockets of the dead thieves and put such oddments as he found upon the table. The lantern was beyond repair, and Labeef brought out a candle from his saddle wallet and lit it and fixed it on the table. Rooster turned up a few coins and cartridges and notes of paper money and a picture of a pretty girl torn from an illustrated paper and pocket knives and a plug of tobacco. He also found a California gold piece in Quincy's vest pocket. I fairly shouted when I saw it. "That is my father's gold piece," said I. "Let me have it." It was not a round coin, but a rectangular slug of gold that was minted in the Golden State and was worth $36 and some few cents. Rooster said, "I never seen a piece like this before. Are you sure it is the one?" I said, "Yes, Grandfather Sperling gave Papa two of these when he married Mama. That scoundrel Cheney has still got the other one. We are on his trail for certain."
"We are on Ned's trail, anyhow," said Rooster. "I expect it's the same thing. I wonder how Quincy got a hold of this. Is this Cheney a gambler?"
Labeef said, "He likes a game of cards. I reckon Ned has called off the robbery if he's not here by now."
"Well, we won't count on that," said Rooster. "Saddle the horses, and I'll lug these boys out."
"Do you aim to run?" said Labeef.
Rooster turned a glittering eye on him.
"I aim to do what I come out here to do," said he. "Saddle the horses."
Rooster directed me to straighten up the inside of the dugout. He carried the bodies out and concealed them in the woods. I sacked up the turkey fragments and pitched the wrecked lantern into the fireplace and stirred around on the dirt floor with a stick to cover the blood. Rooster was planning an ambush. When he came back from his second trip to the woods, he brought a load of limbs for the fireplace. He built up a big fire so there would be light and smoke and indicate that the cabin was occupied. Then we went out and joined Labeef and the horses in the brush arbor. This dwelling, as I have said, was set back in a hollow where two slopes pinched together in a kind of V. It was a good place for what Rooster had in mind. He directed Labeef to take his horse and find a position up on the north slope about midway along one stroke of the V, and explained that he would take up a corresponding position on the south slope. Nothing was said about me with regard to the plan, and I elected to stay with Rooster. He said to Labeef,
"Find you a good place up yonder, and then don't move about. Don't shoot unless you hear me shoot. What we want is to get them all in the dugout. I'll kill the last one to go in, and then we'll have them in a barrel."
"You'll shoot him in the back?" asked Labeef.
"It'll give them to know our intentions is serious. These ain't chicken thieves. I don't want you to start shooting unless they break. After my first shot, I'll call down and see if they will be taken alive. If they won't, we'll shoot them as they come out."
"There is nothing in this plan but a lot of killing," said Labeef. "We want Chelmsford alive, don't we? You're not giving them any show."
"It is no use giving Ned and Hayes a show. If they're taken, they'll hang, and they know it. They'll go for a fight every time. The others may be chicken-hearted and give up. I don't know. Another thing, we don't know how many there is. I do know there's just two of us. Why don't I try to wing Chelmsford before he gets inside?" "I don't like that," said Rooster. "If there's any shooting before they get in that dugout, we're likely to come up with an empty sack. I want Ned, too. I want all of them."
"All right," said Labeef. "But if they do break, I'm going for Chelmsford."
"You're liable to kill him with that big sharps, no matter where you hit him. You go for Ned, and I'll try to nick this Cheney in the legs."
"What does Ned look like?"
"He's a little fella. I don't know what he'll be riding. He'll be doing a lot of talking. Just go for the littlest one."
"What if they hole up in there for a siege?"
"They may figure on staying till dark and then breaking." I don't think they will, said Rooster. Now, don't keep on with this. Get on up there. If something queer turns up, you'll just have to use your head.
How long will we wait?
Till daylight, anyhow.
I don't think they are coming now.
Well, you may be right. Now move. Keep your eyes open and your horse quiet. Don't go to sleep, and don't get the gym jams.
Rooster took a cedar bough and brushed around over all our tracks in front of the dugout. Then we took our horses and led them up a hill and a roundabout route along a rocky stream bed. We went over the crest, and Rooster posted me there with the horses. He told me to talk to them or give them some oats or put my hand over their nostrils if they started blowing or neighing. He put some corn dodgers in his pocket and left to go for his ambush position. I said,
I cannot see anything from here.
He said, this is where I want you to stay.
I am going with you, where I can see something.
You'll do like I tell you.
The horses will be all right.
You've not seen enough killing tonight?
I am not staying here by myself.
We started back over the ridge together. I said, wait, I will go back and get my revolver. But he grabbed me roughly and pulled me along after him, and I left the pistol behind. He found us a place behind a big log that offered a good view of the hollow and the dugout. We kicked the snow back so that we could rest on the leaves underneath. Rooster loaded his rifle from a sack of cartridges and placed the sack on the log where he would have it ready at hand. He got out his revolver and put a cartridge into the one chamber that he kept empty under the hammer. The same shells fit his pistol and rifle alike. I thought you had to have different kinds. I bunched myself up inside the slicker and rested my head against the log. Rooster ate a corn dodger and offered me one. I said, strike a match and let me look at it first.
What for? Said he.
There was blood on some of them.
We ain't striking no matches.
I don't want it then. Let me have some taffy.
It is all gone.
I tried to sleep, but it was too cold. I cannot sleep when my feet are cold.
I asked Rooster what he had done before he became a federal marshal.
I done everything but keep school, said he.
What was one thing you did? Said I.
I skinned buffalo and killed wolves for bounty out there on the Yellow House Creek in Texas. I seen wolves out there that weighed 150 pounds.
Did you like it?
It paid well enough, but I didn't like that open country. Too much wind to suit me. There ain't but about 6 trees between there and Canada. Some people like it fine. Everything that grows out there has got stickers on it.
Have you ever been to California?
I never got out there.
My grandfather Sperling lives in Monterey, California. He owns a store there, and he can look out his window anytime he wants to and see the blue ocean. He sends me $5 every Christmas. He has buried 2 wives and is now married to one called Jenny, who is 31 years of age. That is 1 year younger than Mama. Mama will not even say her name.
I fooled around in Colorado for a spell, but I never got out to California. I freighted supplies for a man named Cook out of Denver.
Did you fight in the war?
Yes, I did.
Papa did, too. He was a good soldier.
I expect he was.
Did you know him?
No. Where was he?
He fought at Elkhorn Tavern in Arkansas and was badly wounded at Chickamauga up in the state of Tennessee. He came home after that and nearly died on the way. He served in General Churchill's brigade.
I was mostly in Missouri.
Did you lose your eye in the war?
I lost it in the fight at Lone Jack out of Kansas City. My horse was down, too, and I was all but blind. Cole Younger crawled out under a hail of fire and pulled me back. Poor Cole. He and Bob and Jim are now doing life in the Minnesota pen. You watch when the truth is known. They will find it was Jesse W. James that shot that cashier in Northfield.
Do you know Jesse James?
I don't remember him. Potter tells me he was with us at Centralia and killed a Yankee major there. Potter said he was a mean little viper then, though he was only a boy. Said he was meaner than Frank. That is going some, if it be so. I remember Frank well. We called him Buck then. I don't remember Jesse.
Now you are working for the Yankees.
Well, the times has changed since Betsy died. I would have never thought it back then. The Redlegs from Kansas burned my folks out and took their stock. They didn't have nothing to eat but clabber and roasting ears. You can eat a peck of roasting ears and go to bed hungry.
What did you do when the war was over?
Well, I will tell you what I done. When we heard they'd all give up in Virginia, Potter and me rode into Independence and turned over our arms. They asked us was we ready to respect the government in Washington City and take an oath to the Stars and Stripes. We said yes, we was about ready. We done it, we swallowed the puppy, but they wouldn't let us go right then. They gave us a one-day parole and told us to report back in the morning. We heard there was a Kansas major coming in that night to look over everybody for bushwhackers.
What are bushwhackers?
I don't know. That is what they called us. Anyhow, we was not easy about that Kansas major. We didn't know but what he would lock us up or worse, us having rode with Bill Anderson and Captain Quantrill. Potter lifted a revolver from an office, and we lit out that night on two government mules. I am still traveling on the one-day parole, and I reckon that Jayhawker is waiting yet. Now, our clothes was rags, and we didn't have the price of a plug of tobacco between us. About 8 miles out of town, we run into a federal captain and three soldiers. They wanted to know if they was on the right road for Kansas City. That captain was paymaster, and we relieved them gents of over 4,000 in coin. They squealed like it was their own. It didn't belong to nobody but the government, and we needed a road stake.
$4,000?
Yes, and all in gold. We got the horses, too. Potter taken his half of the money and went down to Arkansas. I went to Cairo, Illinois with mine and started calling myself Burroughs and bought an eating place called the Green Frog and married a grass widow. It had one billiard table. We served ladies and men both, but mostly men.
I didn't know you had a wife.
Well, I don't now. She taken a notion she wanted me to be a lawyer. Running a eating place was too low down for her. She bought a heavy book called Daniels on Negotiable Instruments and set me to reading it. I never could get a grip on it. Old Daniels penned me every time. My drinking picked up, and I commenced staying away 2 and 3 days at a time with my friends. My wife did not crave the society of my river friends. She got a belly full of it and decided she would go back to her first husband, who was clerking in a hardware store over in Paducah. She said, "Goodbye, Reuben. A love for decency does not abide in you." There is your divorced woman talking about decency. I told her, I said, "Goodbye, Nola. I hope that little nail-selling bastard will make you happy this time." She took my boy with her, too. He never did like me anyhow. I guess I did speak awful rough to him, but I didn't mean nothing by it. You would not want to see a clumsier child than Horace. I bet he broke 40 cups.
What happened to the Green Frog?
I tried to run it myself for a while, but I couldn't keep good help, and I never did learn how to buy meat. I didn't know what I was doing. I was like a man fighting bees. Finally, I just give up and sold it for $900 and went out to see the country. That was when I went out to the Staked Plains of Texas and shot buffalo with Vernon Shafto and a flathead Indian called Ollie. The Mormons had run Shafto out of Great Salt Lake City, but don't ask me about what it was for. Call it a misunderstanding and let it go at that. There's no use you asking me questions about it, for I will not answer them. Ollie and me both taken a solemn oath to keep silent. Well, sir, the big shaggies is about all gone. It is a damned shame. I would give $3 right now for a pickled buffalo tongue.
They never did get you for stealing that money?
I didn't look on it as stealing.
That was what it was. It didn't belong to you.
It never troubled me in that way. I sleep like a baby. Have for years.
Colonel Stonehill said you were a road agent before you got to be a marshal.
I wondered who was spreading that talk. That old gentleman would do better minding his own business.
Then it is just talk.
It is very little more than that. I found myself one pretty spring day in Las Vegas, New Mexico, in need of a road stake, and I robbed one of them little high-interest banks there. Thought I was doing a good service.
You can't rob a thief, can you?
I never robbed no citizens. I never taken a man's watch.
It is all stealing, said I.
That was the position they taken in New Mexico, said he. I had to fly for my life. 3 fights in 1 day. Bo was a strong colt then, and there was not a horse in that territory could run him in the ground. But I did not appreciate being chased and shot at like a thief.
When the posse had thinned down to about 7 men, I turned Bo around and taken the reins in my teeth, and I rode right at them boys, firing them 2 Navy sixes I carry on my saddle. I guess they was all married men who loved their families as they scattered and run for home.
That is hard to believe.
What is?
One man riding at 7 men like that.
It is true enough. We done it in the war. I seen a dozen bold riders stampede a full troop of regular cavalry. You go for a man hard enough and fast enough, and he don't have time to think about how many is with him. He thinks about himself and how he may get clear out of the wrath that is about to set down on him.
I think you're stretching the blanket.
Well, that was the way of it. Me and Bo walked into Texas. We didn't run. I might not do it today. I am older and stouter, and so is Bo. I lost my money to some quarter-mile horse racers out there in Texas and followed them highbinders across Red River up in the Chickasaw Nation and lost their trail. That was when I tied up with a man named Fogelson who was taking a herd of beef to Kansas. We had a pretty time with them steers. It rained every night, and the grass was spongy and rank. It was cloudy by day, and the mosquitoes eat us up. Fogelson abused us like a stepfather. We didn't know what sleep was. When we got to the South Canadian, it was all out of the banks, but Fogelson had a time contract, and he wouldn't wait. He said, "Boys, we are going across." We lost near about 70 head getting across and counted ourselves lucky. Lost our wagon, too. We done without bread and coffee after that. It was the same story all over again at the North Canadian. "Boys, we are going across." Some of them steers got bogged in the mud on the other side, and I was pulling them free. Bo was about played out, and I hollered up for that Hutchins to come help me. He was sitting up there on his horse smoking a pipe. Now, he wasn't a regular drover. He was from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he had some interest in the herd. He said, "Do it yourself. That's what you're paid for." I pulled down on him right there. It was not the thing to do, but I was wore out and hadn't had no coffee. It didn't hurt him bad. The ball just skinned his head and he bit his pipe in two. Yet nothing would do but he would have the law. There wasn't no law out there, and Fogelson told him as much, so Hutchins had me disarmed and him and 2 drovers taking me over to Fort Reno. Now, the Army didn't care nothing about his private quarrels, but there happened to be 2 federal marshals there picking up some whiskey peddlers. One of them marshals was Potter.
I was just about asleep. Rooster nudged me and said, "I say, one of them marshals was Potter."
"What?"
"One of them 2 marshals at Fort Reno was Potter."
"It was your friend from the war? The same one?"
"Yes, it was Columbus Potter in the flesh. I was glad to see him. He didn't let on he knowed me. He told Hutchins he would take me in charge and see I was prosecuted. Hutchins said he would come back by Fort Smith when his business was done in Kansas and appear against me. Potter told him his statement right there was good enough to convict me of assault. Hutchins said he never heard of a court where they didn't need witnesses. Potter said they had found it saved time. We come on over to Fort Smith, and Potter got me commissioned as deputy marshal. Joe Shelby had vouched for him to the chief marshal and got him the job. General Shelby is in the railroad business up in Missouri now, and he knows all these Republicans. He wrote a handsome letter for me, too. Well, there is no beat of a good friend. Potter was a trump.
Do you like being a marshal?
I believe I like it better than anything I done since the war. Anything beats droving. Nothing I like to do pays well.
I don't think Cheney is going to show up.
We will get him.
I hope we get him tonight.
You told me you loved coon hunting.
I didn't expect it would be easy. I still hope we get him tonight and have it done with. Rooster talked all night. I would doze off and wake up, and he would still be talking. Some of his stories had too many people in them and were hard to follow, but they helped to pass the hours and took my mind off the cold. I did not give credence to everything he said. He said he knew a woman in Sedalia, Missouri, who had stepped on a needle as a girl, and 9 years later the needle worked out of the thigh of her 3rd child. He said it puzzled the doctors. I was asleep when the bandits arrived. Rooster shook me awake and said,
"Here they come."
I gave a start and turned over on my stomach so I could peer over the log. It was false dawn, and you could see broad shapes and outlines, but you could not make out details. The riders were strung out, and they were laughing and talking amongst themselves. I counted them. Six. Six armed men against two. They exercised no caution at all, and my thought was, Rooster's plan is working fine. But when they were about 50 yards from the dugout, they stopped. The fire inside the dugout had gone down, but there was still a little string of smoke coming from the mud chimney. Rooster whispered to me, "Do you see your man?" I said, "I cannot see their faces." He said, "That little one without the hat is Ned Pepper. He has lost his hat. He's riding foremost." "What are they doing?"
"Looking about. Keep your head down."
Lucky Ned Pepper appeared to be wearing white trousers, but I learned later that these were sheepskin chaps. One of the bandits made a sound like a turkey gobbling. He waited and gobbled again, and then another time. But of course there was no reply from the vacant dugout. Two of the bandits then rode up to the dugout and dismounted. One of them called out several times for Quincy. Rooster said,
"That's Hayes."
The two men then entered the cabin with their arms ready. In a minute or so, they came out and searched around outside. The man, Hayes, called out repeatedly for Quincy, and once he hooped like a man calling hogs. Then he called back to the bandits who had remained mounted, saying,
"The horses are here. It looks like Moon and Quincy have stepped out."
"Stepped out where?"
inquired the bandit chieftain, Lucky Ned Pepper.
"I can make nothing from the sign," said the man, Hayes. "There are six horses in there. There is a pot of sofki in the fireplace, but the fire is down. It beats me. Maybe they are out tracking game in the snow."
Lucky Ned Pepper said,
"Quincy would not leave a warm fire to go track a rabbit at night. That's no answer at all."
Hayes said,
"The snow is all stirred up out here in front. Come and see what you make of it, Ned."
The man that was with Hayes said,
"What difference does it make? Let us change horses and get on out of here. We can get something to eat at Ma's place."
Lucky Ned Pepper said,
"Let me think a minute."
The man that was with Hayes said,
"We are wasting time that is better spent riding. We have lost enough time in this snow and left a broad track as well."
When the man spoke the second time, Rooster identified him as a Mexican gambler from Fort Worth, Texas, who called himself the original Greaser Bob. He did not talk the Mexican language, though I suppose he knew it. I looked hard at the mounted bandits, but mere effort was not enough to pierce the shadows and make out faces. Nor could I tell much from their physical attitudes, as they were wearing heavy coats and big hats, and their horses were ever milling about. I did not recognize Papa's horse, Judy. Lucky Ned Pepper pulled one of his revolvers and fired it rapidly, three times in the air. The noise rumbled in the hollow, and there followed an expectant silence. In a moment there came a loud report from the opposite ridge, and Lucky Ned Pepper's horse was felled as though from a poleaxe. Then more shots from the ridge, and the bandits were seized with panic and confusion. It was LeBeef over there, firing his heavy rifle as fast as he could load it. Rooster cursed and rose to his feet and commenced firing and pumping his Winchester repeating rifle. He shot Hayes and the original Greaser before they could mount their horses. Hayes was killed where he stood. The hot cartridge cases from Rooster's rifle fell on my hand, and I jerked it away. When he turned to direct his fire on the other bandits, the original Greaser, who was only wounded, got to his feet and caught his horse and rode out behind the others. He was clinging to the far side of his horse with one leg thrown over for support. If you had not followed the entire stunt from start to finish, as I had done, you would have thought the horse was riderless. That is how he escaped Rooster's attention. I was mesmerized and proved to be of no help. Now I will back up and tell of the others. Lucky Ned Pepper was bowled over with his horse, but he quickly crawled from under the dead beast and cut his saddle wallets free with a knife. The other three bandits had already spurred their horses away from the deadly cockpit
as I may call it, and they were firing their rifles and revolvers at Labeef on the run. Rooster and I were behind them, and a good deal farther away from them than Labeef. As far as I know, not a shot was fired at us. Lucky Ned Pepper shouted after the riders and pursued them on foot in a zigzag manner. He carried the saddle wallets over one arm and a revolver in the other hand. Rooster could not hit him. The bandit was well named Lucky, and his luck was not through running yet. In all the booming and smoke and confusion, one of his men chanced to hear his cries, and he wheeled his horse about and made a dash back to pick up his boss. Just as the man reached Lucky Ned Pepper and leaned over to extend a hand to help him aboard, he was knocked clean from the saddle by a well-placed shot from Labeef's powerful rifle. Lucky Ned Pepper expertly swung aboard in the man's place, without so much as a word or a parting glance at the fallen friend who had dared to come back and save him. He rode low, and the trick-riding Mexican gambler followed him out, and they were gone. The scrap did not last as long as it has taken me to describe it. Rooster told me to get the horses. He ran down the hill on foot. The bandits had left two of their number behind, and we had forced the others to continue their flight on jaded ponies, but I thought we had little reason to congratulate ourselves. The bandits in the snow were dead men and could tell no tales. We had not identified Cheney among those who escaped. Was he with them? Were we really on his trail? Also, we found that Lucky Ned Pepper had made off with the greater part of the loot from the train robbery. The thing might have fallen out more to our advantage had Labeef not started the fight prematurely, but I cannot be sure. I think Lucky Ned Pepper had no intention of entering that dugout, or indeed of approaching it any closer, when he discovered the two stock thieves unaccountably missing. So, our plan had miscarried in any case. Rooster was disposed to place all the blame on Labeef. When I reached the bottom of the hill with the horses, he was cursing the Texan to his face. I am certain the two must have come to blows if Labeef had not been distracted from a painful wound. A ball had struck his rifle stock, and splinters of wood and lead had torn the soft flesh of his upper arm. He said he had not been able to see well from his position and was moving to a better place when he heard the three signal shots fired by Lucky Ned Pepper. He thought the fight was joined, and he stood up from a crouch and threw a quick shot down at the man he had rightly sized up as the bandit chieftain. Rooster called it a likely story and charged that Labeef had fallen asleep and had started shooting from panic when the signal shots awakened him. I thought it was in Labeef's favor that his first shot had struck and killed Lucky Ned Pepper's horse. If he had been shooting from panic, would he have come so near to hitting the bandit chieftain with his first shot? On the other hand, he claimed to be an experienced officer and rifleman, and if he had been alert and had taken a deliberate shot, would he not have hit his mark? Only Labeef knew the truth of the matter. I grew impatient with their wrangling over the point. I think Rooster was angry because the play had been taken away from him, and because Lucky Ned Pepper had beaten him once again. The two officers made no move to give pursuit to the robber band, and I suggested that we had better make such a move. Rooster said he knew where they were going to Earth, and he did not wish to risk riding into an ambush along the way. Labeef made the point that our horses were fresh and theirs jaded. He said we could track them easily and overtake them in short order. But Rooster wanted to take the stolen horses and the dead bandits down to McAllister's and establish a prior claim to any reward the MK&T Railroad might offer. Scores of marshals and railroad detectives and informers would soon be in on the game, said he. Labeef was rubbing snow on the torn places of his arm to check the bleeding. He took off his neckcloth for use as a bandage, but he could not manage it with one hand, and I helped him. Rooster watched me minister to the Texan's arm, and he said, "That's nothing to do with you. Go inside and make some coffee." I said, This will not take long, he said.
Let it go and make the coffee.
I said, why are you being so silly? He walked away, and I finished binding up the arm. I heated up the sofki and picked the trash from it and boiled some coffee in the fireplace. Labeef joined Rooster in the stock cave, and they strung the 6 horses together with halters and a long manila rope and lashed the 4 dead bodies across their backs like sacks of corn. The dun horse belonging to Moon bolted and bared his teeth and would not permit his dead master to be placed on his back. A less sensitive horse was found to serve. Rooster could not identify the man who had returned to rescue Lucky Ned Pepper. I say man. He was really only a boy, not much older than I. His mouth was open, and I could not bear to look at him. The man Hayes was old, with a sallow, wrinkled face. They had a hard time breaking the revolver free from his death grip. The 2 officers found Hayes's horse in the woods nearby. He was not injured. Right behind the saddle, the horse was carrying 2 tow sacks, and in these sacks were about 35 watches, some ladies' rings, some pistols, and around $600 in notes and coin. Loot from the passengers of the Katy Flyer. While searching over the ground where the bandits had made their fight, Labeef turned up some copper cartridge cases. He showed them to Rooster. I said, what are they? Rooster said,
this one is a .44 rimfire from a Henry rifle.
Thus, we had another clue.
But we did not have Cheney. We had not even set eyes on him to know it.
We took a hasty breakfast of the Indian hominy dish and departed the place. It was only an hour's ride to the Texas road. We made quite a caravan. If you had chanced to be riding up the Texas road on that bright December morning, you would have met 2 red-eyed peace officers and a sleepy youth from near Dardanelle, Arkansas, riding south at a walk and leading 7 horses. Had you looked closely, you would have seen that 4 of those horses were draped over with the corpses of armed robbers and stock thieves. We did, in fact, meet several travelers, and they marveled and wondered at our grisly cargo. Some of them had already heard news of the train robbery. One man, an Indian, told us that the robbers had realized $17,000 in cash from the express car. 2 men and a buggy told us their information put the figure at $70,000. A great difference. The accounts did agree roughly on the circumstances of the robbery. Here is what happened. The bandits broke the switch lock at Wagoner's Switch and forced the train onto a cattle siding. There, they took the engineer and the fireman as hostages and threatened to kill them if the express clerk did not open the doors of his car. The clerk had spunk and refused to open the doors. The robbers killed the fireman, but the clerk still held fast. The robbers then blasted the door open with dynamite, and the clerk was killed in the explosion. More dynamite was used to open the safe. While this was going on, 2 bandits were walking through the coaches with cocked revolvers, gathering up booty from the passengers. One man in a sleeping car protested the outrage and was assaulted and cut on the head with a pistol barrel. He was the only one they bothered except for the fireman and the express clerk. The bandits wore their hats low and had handkerchiefs tied over their faces, but Lucky Ned Pepper was recognized by way of his small size and commanding manner. None of the others was identified. And that is how they robbed the Katy Flyer at Wagner's Switch. The riding was easy on the Texas road. It was broad and had a good packed surface, as Rooster had described it. The sun was out, and the snow melted fast under the warm and welcome rays of Old Sol. As we rode along, Labeef commenced whistling tunes, perhaps to take his mind off his sore arm. Rooster said,
God damn a man that whistles.
It was the wrong thing to say if he wished it to stop. Labeef then had to keep it up to show that he cared little for Rooster's opinion. After a while, he took a Jew's harp from his pocket. He began to thump and twang upon it. He played fiddle tunes. He would announce, "Soldier's Joy," and play that. Then, "Johnny in the Low Ground," and play that. Then, "The 8th of January," and play that. They all sounded pretty much like the same song. Labeef said, "Is there anything you would particularly like to hear, Cogburn?" He was trying to get his goat. Rooster gave no answer. Labeef then played a few minstrel tunes and put the peculiar instrument away. In a few minutes, he asked Rooster this question, indicating the big revolvers in the saddle scabbards. "Did you carry those in the war?" Rooster said, "I have had them a good long time." Labeef said, "I suppose you were with the cavalry." Rooster said, "I forget just what they called it." "I wanted to be cavalryman," said Labeef, "but I was too young and didn't own a horse. I have always regretted it. I went in the army on my 15th birthday and saw the last 6 months of the war. My mother cried because my brothers had not been home in 3 years. They were off at the first tap of a drum. The army put me in the supply department, and I counted beeves and sacked oats for General Kirby Smith at Shreveport. It was no work for a soldier. I wanted to get out of the Trans-Mississippi Department and go east. I wanted to see some real fighting. Right toward the last, I got an opportunity to travel up there with a commissary officer, Major Burks, who was being transferred to the Department of Virginia. There were 25 in our party, and we got there in time for Five Forks in Petersburg, and then it was all over. I have always regretted that I did not get to ride with Stewart or Forrest or some of the others, Shelby and Early." Rooster said nothing. I said, "It looks like 6 months would be enough for you." Labeef said, "No, it sounds boastful and foolish, but it was not. I was almost sick when I heard of the surrender." I said, "My father said he sure was glad to get home. He nearly died on the way." Labeef then said to Rooster, "It is hard to believe a man cannot remember where he served in the war. Do you not even remember your regiment?" Rooster said, "I think they called it the bullet department. I was in it 4 years." "You do not think much of me, do you, Cogburn?"
"I don't think about you at all when your mouth is closed."
"You're making a mistake about me."
"I don't like this kind of talk. It is like women talking."
"I was told in Fort Smith that you rode with Quantrill in that border gang." Rooster made no reply. Labeef said, "I have heard they were not soldiers at all, but murdering thieves."
Rooster said, "I have heard the same thing."
"I heard they murdered women and children at Lawrence, Kansas."
"I have heard that, too. It is a damned lie."
"Were you there?"
"Where?"
"The Lawrence raid."
"There has been a lot of lies told about that."
"Do you deny they shot down soldiers and civilians alike and burned the town?"
"We missed Jim Lane."
"What army was you in, mister?"
"I was at Shreveport first with Kirby Smith."
"Yes, I heard about all them departments. What side was you on?"
"I was in the Army of Northern Virginia, Cogburn, and I don't have to hang my head when I say it. Now, make another joke about it. You were only trying to put on a show for this girl Mattie with what you must think is a keen tongue."
"This is like women talking."
"Yes, that is the way. Make me out foolish in this girl's eyes."
"I think she has got you pretty well figured."
"You are making a mistake about me, Cogburn, and I do not appreciate the way you make conversation."
"That is nothing for you to worry about. That, nor Captain Quantrill either."
"Captain Quantrill?"
"You had best let this go, Labeef."
"Captain of what?"
"If you are looking for a fight, I will accommodate you. If you are not, you will let this alone."
"Captain Quantrill, indeed." I rode up between them and said, "I have been thinking about something. Listen to this. There were 6 bandits and 2 stack thieves, and yet only 6 horses at the dugout. What is the answer to that?
Rooster said,
Six horses was all they needed.
I said, Yes, but that six includes the horses belonging to Moon and Quincy. There were only four stolen horses.